Hello and welcome to Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I'm Clayton Ashley.
And I'm Maddie Lipchansky.
This week on episode 14 of the show and episode 14 of the series, season one, Sleepy Dogs. It came out the week of January 30th, 2002. We actually had a lot to talk about this episode before we got into it.
Yeah.
That somehow isn't as aligned as I thought. I'm so curious about this. But my main point is that the Klingons are so sleepy.
They're sleeping. They should have called the episode Sleeping Klingons because they are asleep the whole time.
Which I was trying to think about this. Is it the second time or the third time a Klingon has mostly been like incapacitated the majority of the episode?
I think it's technically the third episode because the pilot was a two-parter.
Fair.
But yeah, it's cool to take the most iconic and dynamic Star Trek race, who is very famous for running around and yelling and screaming and throwing things and killing people, and be like, well, what if they were just little eepy guys?
They're just lying there on set and all that makeup we made them put on. It's going to be so frustrating. But I imagine what the writers came up against was like, oh, actually, yeah, they are aggressive, dynamic, and we can't have that on this show. That's not the show's vibe.
Yeah, the show's vibe is more like nothing happening. people sitting around waiting for stuff to happen, then nothing happens.
But I can say this, as our science officer this week, to take us back to the week of January 30th, 2002, there's some stuff to talk about.
Ooh.
Stocks plunged.
Oh, no.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average plummeted 247.51 points, or 2.51%, to a total of 9,618.
Is that bad?
Yeah, it was the biggest drop in 3 months.
Mm.
And the Enron stuff is going on. The CEO had just resigned. There was big congressional hearings go. It's shaky. The economy is shaky.
I recall this time vividly. Mm-hmm. I remember the president saying to us, you have to buy stuff or the terrorists have won.
It's not working. Buy more.
Yeah. Another thing we didn't talk about in terms of like the break over the holidays was like the 2001 to 2002 holiday season madness of like, yeah, you have to, if you do not have the shoppies for your nation, you are not a patriot.
But they didn't shop enough.
Yeah, it's my fault and yours for not going shopping enough.
Clearly didn't buy enough Shrek VHSs. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long it took, actually. It's skewed, because nowadays you can get a DVD Blu-ray after like 20 days.
Yeah, I feel like you used to have to wait like a year.
Yeah.
It used to be like a momentous thing, like, oh, fucking Shrek is finally on VHS or DVD.
This Christmas you see Lord of the Rings, and next Christmas you buy the extended edition DVD.
Receive Lord of the Rings. I had this really vivid memory in like 1999 or 2000 of an ad being run by Blockbuster Video. I'm 1,000 years old. It was an ad being run by Blockbuster, and in the ad it was like a bunch of like teenage girls like trying to like break down the doors of the Blockbuster.
What are they after?
And then one pimply faced teen like opens the door and is like knocked down by this like tide of teen girls screaming to get in the door. And it's because like Blockbuster was like, on this date is when you'll be able to get Titanic on VHS. And it was just like, what a crazy thing to promote. Not like a movie coming out, but just like a movie becoming available for rent, which he was able to do before he was able to buy.
I wonder if you had to pay two rentals for both VHSs of Titanic.
I don't think so.
It's a two-parter.
It was a two VHS chunker. I had one in my home. I used to like to watch the second tape because that's when all the cool stuff
happened.
That's
all the disaster shit, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of disasters, we also got the State of the Union in this window, and that is when good old W introduced the Axis of Evil.
So a really cursed time to be alive.
Yeah, this was named specifically Iran, Iraq, and North Korea as regimes that sponsor terrorism.
I'm thinking about all the terrorism that North Korea sponsors.
Exactly.
Who could forget all the things that North Korea did? abroad. That's crazy. Yeah, that's a really particularly evil man there. Really geared. You forget how fast he was like, we got to invade Iraq.
Yeah, and the naming of specifically, like, these are evil countries.
Did not name, by the way, the actual sponsor of 9/11.
Yeah, of course. The long-running joke, I guess. So that's all that was happening, I guess, in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else. Because I got a lot of movie stuff to talk about, actually.
Okay.
Run down really quick here what the top 10 was this week. And you're going to notice a good chunk of new ones, actually. So Black Hawk Down still top. A Beautiful Mind, number 2.
Oh.
So this, I feel like, is probably the most well-known of these ones I'm going to go through. So yeah. I don't have much to say about it.
A movie I saw in theaters.
Wow.
I believe.
I saw one of these in theaters, too. It's a very embarrassing one, though.
Okay. All right. What's yours?
We'll get to it. Okay. It's way at the bottom. Okay. Number 3, though, The Count of Monte Cristo. I almost said Crisco. I have to admit.
I wasn't going to say anything. I was biting my tongue to make a joke about the sandwich, but instead, now we're talking about Crisco, the cooking oil shortening.
It's a good sandwich, though, isn't it?
The Monte Cristo?
Yeah.
It's a quality sandwich. Of our named sandwiches as a culture?
Yeah.
The sandwiches we've decided to get a name?
Deserve a name.
I guess it's just the Monte Cristo and, like, the Croque Monsieur et Madame.
Now, I saw, I think, a post that Croque Monsieur essentially translates to Mr. Crunchy.
It does translate to Mr. Crunchy.
Beautiful. That's a beautiful thing.
And his wife, Mrs. Crunchy, the Croque Madame. Well, there's the famous post by my No Gods, No Mayors co-host, November.
That's what I saw.
Well, no, the Mr. Crunchy post is a different post. This is the post that's like, France, we're fancy. You know, and then like, well, I'm like me, okay. And it's like our national sandwich is a ham sandwich. And you're like, aha, and you're like, a sandwich with an egg is his wife. It's a Twitter classic.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
But anyway, the movie. And I'm not talking about the one that came out last year, because they made another one of these, a French movie came out.
Okay.
The 2002 one. I went and watched the trailer, and it's got great aughts era lounge beats, just, you know, for no reason in this historical drama.
Yeah.
I love that they used the line count on revenge.
Ooh,
that's great. It was directed by Kevin Reynolds of Red Dawn and Waterworld fame, or infamy.
Oh,
I suppose.
Okay.
Starring Jim Caviezel. How do you say
Caviezel? Jesus himself.
Gosh,
that's Jesus from the Passion of the Christ.
Oh, right.
Jim Caviezel.
I was trying to think of what I knew him from. Guy Pearce.
You knew him from being your Lord and Savior.
My Lord and Savior.
Who died for your sins after seeing all of humanity's sins in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Mm.
That's where you recognize him from, Clayton. You recognize him from being your the son of your God.
Yes, how could I forget? we also got Guy Pearce, Richard Harris, James Frain.
Okay.
Luis Guzman. Solid cast. Looks like a pretty good movie, honestly.
Okay.
And then right underneath it, number 4, and it kind of a weird time for this movie, I feel like, but The Mothman Prophecies.
Oh, yeah. Scared of that movie.
Scary. It looks like it's got a lot of X-Files-y-ness to it, based on true events, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Also has, I swear, like nearly the same kind of lounge beats in the trailer as the previous movie's trailer. That just a thing in movies trailers of this era.
That's the Richard Gere joint, right?
Yeah. And then number 5, don't want to talk about this a ton, but I Am Sam.
Pass. Skip.
Yeah.
No, that movie, you couldn't make it today, Clayton.
You could.
I'll tell you that much.
They don't make those anymore. So it's been around for over a month, actually, at this point. I think it started actually picking up steam. A lot of movie issues around this movie and its depiction of a learning disability by a neurotypical actor. But apparently, the controversy at the time was that he did not win an Oscar for it.
Good.
Yeah, so that, I think, says a lot. But also, I guess, to note, Dakota Fanning had a breakout role at this, I think, at the age of 7. So.
Yeah. He was nominated for an Oscar for the role.
He was nominated,
if I recall, but he lost.
I didn't even bother to look up to.
he lost to Denzel Washington in Training Day, which is, to me, fine.
Fine. No opposition to that. So we have at number six, a Mandy Moore vehicle, A Walk to Remember.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Take a risk. Love is a leap of faith.
I agree.
So does the trailer. I mean, the trailer said it, and there was some schmaltzy music from a band I probably should have recognized, but did not. I not my kind of movie, I guess.
No, is that the first of like V Nicholas Sparks movies?
Is it? I have no idea. It's a book. It's based on a book.
Yeah, it is the, I feel like it is the first big Nicholas Sparks movie. Because The Notebook he wrote before he wrote A Walk to Remember, but I think the movie came out afterwards. I'm almost positive. If I'm wrong, don't write in.
Yeah, don't care.
No, I'm right. I'm right.
You're right.
I'm right. He also, the book Message in a Bottle also became a movie, I think.
Mm-hmm.
No, it didn't. Never mind. Goodbye. And that's me. That's me for the day. I think the sort of dawning of like a whole era of slop.
But you know what? Mm. I can admit that there was slop in some of these weeks for me that I would have liked or did like, and there was slop for other people, and good for them. You know what? Whatever. I'd rather be a movie theater packed full of different movies than 28 screens dedicated to, I don't know, whatever's coming out this week.
Yeah.
Something pushed out the Looney Tunes movie, and it made me mad. Because they made a 2D animated Looney Tunes movie for 3 days in theaters.
Yes, they did. Very stupid.
Very stupid.
And they took all the Looney Tunes off of the WB, the HBO Max.
Hard out there for a tune.
Max, the place for HBO. I don't want to get that wrong.
But to put a pin on the movies, and to my extreme embarrassment, the movie I did see, Kung Pao, Enter the Fist.
Clayton, we did not discuss this before the show, but I do have to tell you.
Yeah.
I also saw that in theaters.
Well, there we go. There we go. So
but when we walked out of Kung Pao Enter the Fist on opposite sides of the country, me in somewhere in suburban Connecticut, and you in
suburban Kansas,
you walking by our friend Lawrence asleep in his truck.
Yep.
leaving Kung Pao Enter the Fist and looking up at the same stars, Clayton. Yeah,
it's a small world. Isn't that
beautiful
after
to
all.
Think about?
A lot to think about. That cow that did kung fu. This is truly a terrible thing that happened. It was a kung fu spoof, not like on its face a terrible idea to do that, but the trailer rate like. Someone else, I think, could do this better.
I mean, I think crucially it was like cut from other kung fu movies.
Yes.
And they intercut it in with this guy who was not Dana Carvey, but looked like him, I recall.
First I saw it. I thought I saw the name Odenkirk. And I'm like, wait a minute, what? But it's Odenkirk.
He does not look like Dana Carvey. I'm out of my mind. Maybe he does a little bit. Anyways.
Who wrote and directed it, and then he like stars in it, and also wrote and directed alongside Rudy Berdin. I'm not going to say there's a ton of talent here, but yeah, the ultimate insult is that they took this 1976 Hong Kong martial arts film, Tiger and Crane Fist.
Yes.
Fists, which was starring and directed by a Jimmy Wang Yu. And then they digitally inserted this Steve on top of the actual guy in those movies.
Digitally inserted Steve technology. Yes.
And so, yeah, they insert him. And then they also have some of their own, you know, original scenes for this movie.
I remember his tongue having a mouth and talking.
It's in the trailer. It's terrible.
It's awful.
And they also, in their own scenes, and also in the scenes where they digitally inserted him, they did, like, nonsense talking on the set. So that they could do the dubbing over it so that it was also hilariously dubbed like the actual martial arts film footage they were using.
It is, I think, generously not funny, ungenerously maybe a little racist.
Don't disagree.
Really important, this guy, Odenkirk, I knew his name looked familiar and I checked. He founded an animation studio called O Entertainment that was responsible for that horrible film Barnyard.
Yes. And the Jimmy Neutrons.
And the Jimmy's Neutron. And also those horrible animated shorts where it's like human thumbs with faces on them.
Oh, God.
The Thumbmation.
Oh,
this man caused so much pain to my eyeballs and my life.
I've seen the Star Wars thumb ones at a friend's house.
I believe there it is called Thumb Wars.
They had one good joke in it that I still remember, which is when one of the thumbs asks, why do we all have British voices when we live in space and there is no Britain?
Mm.
And then I think the Darth thumb kills him.
It's pretty good. I mean, the thing about that is, you know who also has a good joke about that is fucking Carrie Fisher in her monologues, which is actually funny and good.
Yep. There you go.
In Wishful Drinking, she makes a joke about it. That's very funny. So this guy, Steve, I'm going to digitally edit you out of my brain.
Yes. Let's put this to bed.
Sorry, did he write Patch Adams?
Wait, what?
Hold on. Yes. Oh my, Clayton.
What a twist.
So, hold on. So, you know, Faith of the Heart, the Rod Stewart version, is in Patch Adams.
The connection. Oh no.
This guy, right? This guy's like the grandfather of our podcast.
I hate it.
This guy, without this guy, Clayton, the podcast
there would be no Faith of the Heart. And I can tell you, if this TV show did not have Faith of the Heart, there wouldn't be enough for me to want to have watched it.
Yeah.
To power through this terrible first season.
Yeah, I'm really stuck on this. He also directed Ace Ventura and Nature Calls.
Come on.
He wrote The Nutty Professor, the one from the 90s. He fucking wrote Bruce Almighty and Evan Almighty.
So this guy, he might have one of the highest ratios of like production of pure direct to like how much he fucking earned in terms of like box office and all this other junk.
Yeah, he was as the executive producer of Juana Man the same year as Kung Pao.
Well, I'll say this.
Kung Fu Enter the Pow
did not do well. But some of that other stuff unfortunately did, so I guess he had a name for
Clayton,
himself in Hollywood.
I have such bad news. It only made $17 million, but it only cost $10.
Well.
So everybody got paid out.
Everyone got paid out.
Oh, it sucks so bad. What a bad time for culture.
Yeah. Anyways. Music.
What's up with music?
You Got It Bad by Usher, still on top.
Beautiful.
Could you remind me if How You Remind Me was number two last week?
It'll tell you.
I know it will. Just had to say it that dumb way.
Okay. I believe it was. It's number two again.
I just had to check a couple of these because it's very similar to what it was last week. But I had to go and listen, and I confirmed this because I've mentioned it a couple times. At number seven, In the End by Linkin Park. That was the song specifically that my homeroom teacher seemed to either have on the radio, just happened to be, or he was playing a CD. I don't know. I feel like I heard that song 4 to 5 times a week. It just like got locked in my brain. And you know what? I never listened to another Linkin Park song as far as I can tell. So it did not, didn't have any kind of Stockholm syndrome on me. It did not make me into a fan. It simply was something I had to endure for 3 years.
Was that the one with the whales? No.
What?
That was a later one. There's a big, In the End has the whales in the music video. There's like big whales flying around.
Did I take it off of here? I went and watched the Creed, Something Survive. I watched that music video where they're like in a flooded town.
Yeah, no, In the End is came out earlier. It actually came out first in 2000. And that one, he's like rapping on top of a building.
Yes.
And there's like whales flying around in the sky.
I believe you are right. I do remember this now. All else I have to report is that Family Affair has fallen. Repeat, Family Affair has fallen off the top 10.
I'm cranking the big siren.
Yeah.
I'm firing the 21 gun salute. You've been with us basically the whole show, Family Affair.
Essentially.
It is, I would say, temporal culture war, where it's no longer a family affair.
No longer. But that's really all I have to report on the music. And we'll wrap up here with television, some ominous things to get to. But first, Friends and CSI, Raymond, they're all up there at the top. Stephen King's three-part Rose Red miniseries on ABC.
I don't remember that at all.
It didn't have exactly high marks on some of the critics' websites I saw, but probably a okay thing to watch on public cable.
Okay, it's got my man Matt Ross in it, who I like. You may remember him from Big Love or American Psycho.
Oh, yes.
Or right. That's about it.
Certainly worse things you could have watched that week, including not only The West Wing, but The Real West Wing documentary aired.
No.
Just take a guess about what this horrible thing was.
Is it about W?
Not actually.
W. Staffers?
It is rather a cohort, a collection, a grab bag of previous presidents, including Gerald Ford, Lanny Davis, Bill Clinton. Lanny Davis. But Lanny Davis was there.
Sure.
So is Karl Rove, Paul Begalia, Leon Panetta, David Gergen. Jimmy Carter was there. There was another president, Peggy Noonan. Just some incredible people. And, Henry Kissinger. Amazing.
Mm.
Talking about, you know, the actual people who work in the West Wing and the real work they do.
That's really boring to consider.
It beat the West Wing. It was just barely right above it in terms of ratings. So it was popular.
That's crazy. Well, okay. So imagine... You want to turn on your favorite show, Star Trek Enterprise, and you're looking through your TV guide, and you see the listing for Enterprise, and then you see a listing for The Real Enterprise. You're going to be like, well, I'm going to go there. It's real.
It's the real one.
It's like, oh, I'm going to go to Ray's Pizza or the real famous original Ray's Pizza. You know, like I've just one-upped you. That makes sense?
Yeah.
I think it's a really masterful gambit. They should have called a show The Real Friends. About real friends.
You know what? Going back to, I didn't see it on the list, but 60 Minutes, and they went with 60 Minutes too.
Of course.
The Real 60 Minutes.
The Real 60 Minutes.
That, bingo, boom.
I mean, I would have just called it 61 Minutes. What are you going to do? You're at 62 Minutes? I'm 63 minutes now. I can do this all day, Morley Schaefer, or whatever. Schaefer? Is that him? Is that it?
The one other thing I have to say about this West Wing thing is when I was trying to figure out what it exactly was, I got to a New York Post write-up that was kind of joking about how both West Wing and The Real West Wing beat an interview with Bush. So they mentioned that the show starring Martin Sheen as ultra-liberal President Bartlett. And it is funny to me when this show is considers a president in an ultra-liberal, because his like main policy push was... like tax credits for minority businesses, and he puts troops in Jerusalem to enforce a peace accord. It's the political landscape of 2002.
It's not a good time.
And kind of to like just demonstrate that, last thing here on TV ratings. Headline: Fox News beats CNN in ratings for the first time, having only been on the air since 96. Fox News marked its January 2002 is the first time it beat CNN by about 60,000 viewers. I hope this doesn't portend anything about
probably
the direction
not.
Of our country. Probably not.
I doubt it.
But you could watch Enterprise.
You could. You could watch Star Trek Enterprise. Are you curious what would happen if you did that?
Yeah, I am. Inject. So you see escape pods getting out of 2001. Back to 2025.
Yeah, where everything's great. But... Well, the thing about 2025 is that you can watch every episode of Star Trek Enterprise whenever you want. A thing that I've done too many times now in my life, which is to say this is the second time I've watched this episode. All right. So I'm your captain for the episode. That's right. They let woman drive. This episode is called Sleeping Dogs, and they should have called it, like I said before, Sleeping Klingons or Sleeping Clayton, because you were bored by it. Let's take us right in. In the cold open, Hoshi is like in the armory with Malcolm, and they've got the Star Wars orbs for lightsabers zipping around, you know?
It's literally one-to-one.
It's just straight up the orbs. and she's trying to shoot them with a rifle, and Reed is like, man, you suck at this so bad. If this was a real gun, you would have killed everybody on the ship. And then the ship drops out of warp, and they're both like, Bzuh? And like, there's a planet, and it's like, we have to survey the planet, which is like, any planets you go by, if you're at warp speed for day. Anyway,
T'Pol is really annoyed because she's like, you have four gas giants in your home system.
Yeah.
And Archer's response is, we don't have one like this.
We don't have one this big. It's class 9, man. Anyways, after, you know, they launch like their... We hear our beautiful song from Patch Adams. Thanks to Steve Oedekerk for that. After they launch like a probe down at the gas giant and they hear all sorts of weird radiation and siren sounds. The pilot man, Travis, the pilot man, who is disappearing from this show so quickly. It's crazy. Every episode, they're like burying him. There's just a little more dirt on him as they bury his character forever. But he's like, oh, yeah, we heard those sirens. It's like we used to hear them out in space. And they're like, that's T'Pol's like, that's crazy. I don't care.
Did you know his character was he lived in space?
Did you know he lived in space? He grew up in space.
He's from space. He knows this.
He's from space. He grew up on a ship. And he knows all about the sound of sirens. All right.
Oh, yeah. I recognize the screaming.
I recognize this screaming noise. It used to keep me up at night sleeping on my ship, in the ship I grew up on because I'm from space. Anyways, they're like, we're going to go. There's that old canard, Biosigns. And like, we're going to go down there and see what the signs are about. And they start to get an away team together. But meanwhile, very important B plot. Malcolm's got to go to Phlox because he has a cold.
I forgot this was the B plot.
He's all sniffly. He's a sniffly guy.
I get why it's a thing sometimes to have a character who's like sniffly and sick on a TV episode. I don't like it.
You don't like it? You don't like to hear the man sniffle?
I don't know.
Doing his little sniffies? Anyway,
it doesn't amount to anything really, right?
I feel like it kind of comes up, but not...
He can't smell in a scene, and that's...
Yeah, like you think it's going to pay off, but it's just that like he can't smell things when the ship is smelly.
Yeah.
That's that, I guess. But anyways, he goes to see Phlox. Phlox, a thing that I noticed and cannot get out of my brain, wipes his nose for him with a tissue or gives him a tissue, but then throws it into a regular trash can. There's just like a metal trash can that Phlox like opens with his foot and throws the tissue out. And there is a racing stripe on the lid of the trash can when he flips it up. There's just like someone on there, which is like, just get a trash can for the set. I'm like, but it's not the future. And it's like, okay, I'll put a racing stripe on the trash can.
Future.
The future kicks ass, everybody. Then, like, Archer has, like, a fucking IKEA desk.
Yeah. The difference between, like, when you see a set that they built and is nice and has that, I think we mentioned, that kind of, like, NASA punk look to it. And it's, yeah, like, it looks good. And you can see that, and it's fine. And then you get this stuff that is the cheapest crap on set, and it's jarring.
Yeah, there's a really great Instagram account called, like, Star Trek Design. Mm-hmm. That finds like in a lot of Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and original series and Next Gen episodes of like, here's like the lamp that's just in the background. And it was because like they actually did a really good job in a lot of this stuff of like buying stuff that could plausibly be there, and just out of context, it looks like a lamp that you could have in your house, but on the show it actually works. Mm-hmm. I very rarely see stuff from Enterprise. So they're like getting an away team together. Hoshi goes to Archer and she's like, put me on the away team. I am ready to stop being so nervous all the time. And also, like, T'Pol wants her there to translate stuff, which is great. They're like, oh, yeah, we need a translator to go on the ship because we don't know who owns the ship. Crucially, they do not bring Tucker, who, you know, if there's, like, a ship that's, like, dead in the water and they don't bring the engineer, which makes a lot of sense to me, because why would you need him there?
Yeah, and we've mentioned this before. They brought him on many away a mission that it didn't really make sense while he was there, but... Mm-hmm. You know, whatever.
No, whatever. So they all get suited up, and T'Pol is like kind of a bitch to Hoshi. I think what is notable about this episode to me is this feels like the first one where they're like, oh, the two women on the ship should speak to each other.
Yeah.
Huh? What if the only two women on the ship spoke to each other and they had character moments together?
Yeah. And you know, one of the few good scenes in the episode is one of their scenes. I don't think it was this one, but
no, it is not this one, but I kind of like this little storyline where they're like being bitchy to each other because like Hoshi's like looking at the suits and T'Pol is like, when you don't know what the suits are, you're fucking stupid. And she's like, no, I'm just checking, man. Like, get off my back. So anyways, they go, they get in the shuttle pod, they go down to the ship. It's actually kind of like a not horrible effect shot of them seeing the ship in the gas giant, I thought. Mm-hmm. I was kind of impressed.
Yeah.
It looked like maybe they did it with miniatures and not CGI. Or if it, more composite or something. It looked not horrible. And for that, I was clapping on the treadmill. sorry, it was an elliptical. Anyways, they get down there and they're like, oh, it's so deep. We have an hour before this thing is like, we're all fucking toast down here. And they find immediately some Klingon writing. And everyone's like, I've never seen this kind of Klingon ship before, which is why we didn't know it was Klingons.
It was more like, T'Pol was like, there are a lot of ships. I don't know every single one, which is fair.
Fair enough. They go to the bridge and they find some sleepy Klingons who are asleep.
Okay, this annoyed me because I thought when they said, oh, actually they're alive, they're just like real close to death.
Yes.
And they kept cautioning in this first scene about like they could wake at any time. If we move them around, they could wake up. We put them on our little shuttle and save that they could wake up. Like, it feels like they're setting up, you know, Chekhov's Klingons. Like, they're going to pop up and attack at any moment or something. That's going to be the problem they're dealing with. And never do. It's just nothing.
Uh-huh.
Just a wet blanket.
It's kind of, there's like a couple of moments in here where it's like, it seems like something's about to happen.
Uh-huh.
And then it doesn't. Anyways, they're like, should we rescue these guys? And Reed doesn't want to let them die, but T'Pol's like, they want to die at their post because they come from a culture of psychos and maniacs. And that they like they would kill us, you know, if they found us. They hail the Enterprise and they're like, oh, there's like some sort of like neurotoxin. But then you see something almost happens. Almost. A Klingon lady is up there and she sees them. She's like on the bridge and she sees the away team. And then Reed runs after her. She knocks him down and dives into like a shuttle and zips out of there.
Takes their shuttle.
Sorry, I said the shuttle. It is their shuttle, the only shuttle, because crucially, Klingon ships do not have escape pods. But also, I guess they don't have shuttles, which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
But they don't have anything because they're Klingon ships.
And you know what? It's as dumb as the whole, like, we would rather die than survive a fight or die dishonorably, I guess. It does make sense that they would not have escape pods on their ship.
Yeah, like it is, they are an alien species with alien impulses and alien motivations, and that is fine and cool to me that they just straight up do not have escape pods on their ship. I like that. Mm-hmm. A little fun, a little sci-fi detail. Anyways, she zips out of there, and we go to the commercial. Back on the Enterprise, they like see the shuttle pod like go zip by them, and they're like, what the fuck? And there's they catch a signal coming out of the shuttle pod in Klingon saying like anyone around come kill this ship Enterprise who has attacked us. And then they fire the fucking grappling hook at it.
We got the grappling hook.
Oh my god, I cannot believe they're like it's the beam called?
Oh, the tractor beam.
The tractor beam does not exist yet, so we have a grappling hook,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, that rocks, and then they like use it once a season.
Yeah.
And it's like, you have the Zelda hookshot on the outside of your fucking spaceship, and you don't use it ever, because it's stupid to have.
It ultimately is a really dumb thing.
The scale of space travel is so massive. Like, at some point, they're, like, really, really close to the Klingon ship, and they're 10,000 meters away.
Yeah.
What are you going to shoot you're going to shoot a rope at it? It's crazy. How long's your rope, dude? Anyways.
It's also sinking shit, though, to be clear.
To be clear, it rips when they grapple hook the fucking shuttle. That's cool. At this point, I'm actually pretty locked into the episode, I've got to say, because it feels like stuff is happening, despite the sleepy Klingons.
Uh-huh.
They get her in the ship. They shoot her a couple of times to like knock her out.
Yeah.
And like strap her down. Phlox, we're going to go bring the Enterprise down to get the rest of the team. Now, here's what I don't understand is now they have the shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they taking the whole ship down there? It's fine. They talk about this later, but it just seems odd to me. Anyways, we're back on the Klingon vessel. Hoshi and Malcolm and T'Pol are like, what's going on? We cannot move this thing. This thing's dead in the water. There's no escape pods. There's only something called photon torpedoes, which Reed doesn't know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then we as the audience will never find out, I guess. And then Archer gets back in touch. He's like, we're going to come find you. But then the probe is destroyed.
Yeah. Crushed. And
we can't. Yeah, we're getting crushed. The Enterprise can't handle the, you know, they're making up words here. They're like, the Enterprise can't handle the fucking flupons popping out of this gas giant. We can't come down.
I know we can't harangue this sort of show for its science.
No.
But this is just sort of the principle of like crushing pressures. And when something is crushed by pressures, it's not a slow process. It's everything is fine.
And then it's not.
Now you are gone in the blink of an eye. You're just crushed. Like that's when you lose structural integrity, it is a lightning quick destruction. And so we have a couple things like in this episode with a Klingon thing, like, oh no, one compartment just suddenly slowly compresses, but everything else is fine. Or like they're on the Enterprise and in the scene when they're going down there and Pilot Travis is he's like hull plating is failing. Like that's not a, like hull plating is failing means you're dead in this. I mean, it should mean in this situation, to be clear.
Yeah,
if you're billionaires on a submarine trying to see the Titanic, submarine, that's yeah, what you are, it means.
You are turned into mist instantly.
Yeah. But you know, whatever.
Whatever. And Archer's like, we're gonna try this later. We go to commercial again. And then we come back. We're in the medical bay. Phlox is there, and it's like this lady. She was like in a fridge or something, and the toxin didn't work as fast. Archer tries to talk to this lady, and she's like, "I'll kill you, you son of a bitch! I hate your ass. Don't talk to me. Get out of here." And at this point, Tucker is like, "What if we reinforce the shuttle pod?
Yeah,
and we can get down to the vessel that way, because this lady is not helping us."
Specifically, she thinks they are the ones who poisoned her crew.
Yeah, she's like, you poisoned us with a beam or something. Yeah. I don't know what you did.
Yeah,
but I will kill your ass. And then the away team finds like the actual logs from the ship, and it seems like they raided an outpost of an alien species called the Zarantine, which I looked into, and they are never mentioned or appear ever again or before. You know, that's a great use of the space in the script. Apparently the aliens that are not named in the pilot are the Zarantine, according to a later semi-canon novel. So, you know, they really put the thought into this, which I really appreciate that kind of love. Anyways, they raided this Zarantine outpost. They got sick afterwards during the party they had after the raid.
No foreshadowing here, but the captain is drinking some good liquor.
He's really chugging. He's like in this video being like, I'm dying. Chug, chug, chug. Everything's fucked up. Chug, chug, chug. I wonder if it has nothing to do with this thing I'm drinking. Chug, chug, chug. So they also figure out what's wrong with the engine, which is something is wrong with it. You know, the gobos are out of alignment.
The fusion cyber plating.
Yeah, the plating is non-cyber and it doesn't work anymore. At that point, Tucker and Archer are talking about Klingons. And it's like, well, we can't talk to them like humans anymore. We have to figure out, what does a Klingon talk like? And it's like, the thing I don't understand here is, at this point, aren't the Klingons like the only race besides the weird lizard men that shapeshift and stuff? Mm. The Salukis? What are they called?
I can't remember.
That's the mascot of the Northern Illinois University basketball team. The Salamanders, the Suleiman. Yeah. Oh, Suleiman, there it is. I got it. I found it in my brain. My memory palace is unimpeachable. But like the Klingons are the only other race they've really encountered. Like this whole mission kicked off with them going to fucking Kronos, right? Like,
yeah.
I feel like they should have a really robust file on the Klingons and they should know a lot about them just in case they run into the people. It's like if you were trying to like explore the land out west, and you found out that there was just like a band of people driving around in fucking tanks shooting everybody, and they're the only people you know are out there, and their tanks driving around mad all the time at you, and you're like, I'll learn about them later. It just seems, well, stupid to me.
Yeah.
But what do I know? I live on Earth. I'm not out there in the shit in space.
But, you know, at least he has access to the whole Vulcan encyclopedia.
Yeah, they do. They do have like on their little thing there, the Encyclopedia Volcanica.
I guess this is the third time we've run into these jerks. They'll read up on them.
All I know is that they're very sleepy. Anyways, they're back on the vessel there. The Klingon vessel. Reed's like, I'm very lightheaded. We need water because he's sick. And they go to the galley.
Oh, this is where. Okay.
Yeah, they go to the galley and A, it looks like the most fucked up still life of all time in there.
Yeah.
It's just like hanging like weird pigs, which they find. They find a big bowl of gach. The famous Klingon food that's just tentacles in a bowl.
That worms. We always
worms. We love to see it. We love to see the gach.
I love good reference. Honestly, you know, production design here, this scene, great.
Looks fantastic. Cool. This episode looks pretty good and is directed pretty well for the script being, of course, bad.
It's so garbage.
But I think I was into this episode a little more because it was directed very competently, and I was very impressed with that.
Yeah.
So shout out to the director of this episode who has a name, I'm sure, Les Landau. Congratulations.
Good job, Les.
You get the Medal of Honor from us at Temporal Culture War for an episode directed pretty good. they like go to the galley and they see like there's like a holding cell for all the fucking targs, which look like shit and they are computer generated. And that's the one part I was like, get out of here.
Close
show
door.
Me a targ. The fucking joke is that you never see a targ on like any of these shows, whatever. Mm. Don't show me a targ. I don't want to see it. It's just a pig.
Yeah.
It's just a pig. They should call them hogs. Anyways, Hoshi has a panic attack. And then there's a very nice scene where T'Pol takes her hand and she teaches her like Vulcan CBD.
Yeah, basically. That's nice.
It's nice. She does like a Vulcan transcendental meditation with her.
Yeah.
Tells her about like the ocean whatever.
And it's good because like, the way we get into it is a very authentic feeling situation. And
yes,
where Hoshi is basically telling T'Pol, boy, I wish sometimes I could be a Vulcan and turn off my emotions as much as you seem to think they're, you know, us humans revel in them or something. And T'Pol just immediately is like, here, I like, you know, getting that what she needs in this moment is help, but, and that this is actually something she can help her with. She just like immediately goes into, give me your hand, let's do this.
Hop into my brain, let's go.
Yeah, and it's a good character moment for both of them after T'Pol had been kind of a jerk earlier, and this sort of good bridging of species thing that they are trying to go for here and don't always hit the mark on. So it's nice. And I agree that the direction was fine in this episode and some of the effects look okay, but the writing and this frustration with just so many missed opportunities. Like on paper, we find a derelict Klingon ship. Everyone on it's dead. The more Klingon reinforcements are coming. Like this should have been so tense.
Home run.
It was like one of the least tense episodes in some ways. And I know I've seen it not too long ago, so I kind of knew what was going to happen. So maybe if I was coming to it fresh, it would have hit better. But that I think that was the thing that just got me so much. Is it just like, oh, are the Klingons going to like wake up? Or like, is the neurotoxin in the air going to mix with Malcolm's cold and create some new fusion virus? Like, there's so many things that I thought this Star Trek episode could go. And it just seems like, let's just do the most generic kind of solution to these problems.
No, they have that. Everybody's got a tummy ache.
Yeah,
from whatever. Anyways, so then we're on the final act here, where Archer is like, I figured out what to do, how to talk to Klingons. I gotta be an asshole to this lady.
Be an asshole.
I gotta go to this. I gotta go to this lady and appeal to her honor, which works.
Mm-hmm.
Phlox figures out that has a cure to the toxin. Archer tells this lady that everyone's tummy hurts from drinking the ale, and then like convinces her using honor double reverse logic to go help them instead of letting them die, which seems pretty normal to me. back on the vessel, Malcolm's like, I'm going to fire torpedoes into the atmosphere to blow us up.
Upwards. And you know what? This was good. I like this.
Yeah, this is like actual how physics is.
This was a moment of ingenuity.
Yeah.
Of we didn't get a ton of effects, but I don't mind that because there's something to the claustrophobia of them just like, we're just going to launch some missiles and hope they blow us up good. Like, all right, the good way, the right way. And that's good. That was actually, this was a part that had some of the intensity that I would have liked this episode to have.
Yeah. And then, they get up high enough that the modified shuttle is allowed to come down. Archer's like, here's my new friend.
It's specifically, they managed to like figure out this missile thing after Hoshi almost has like a breakthrough or a breakdown where she's just like, fuck it, launch them all. I don't want to die
here.
Yeah,
she's like, I don't care, man. Let's go. Hoshi's like battle Hoshi at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's unlocked herself with the power of
Republicanism.
Cognitive behavioral therapy. Archer and the Klingon show up. They're pals now. And then they get back to the ship and then immediately are hailed by Klingon vessels who are there. And they're like, hey, man, you're under arrest or whatever. Give us your ship. And then Archer, using his newfound knowledge of be an asshole, is like, I'll kill you. My friends are on their way. Your ship sucks.
Oh, yeah,
my
ship
is cool and great. You got to get out of here before my friends show up and kick the shit out of you, man. And then the Klingons leave. And I'm like, this is actually kind of like an Untrekky kind of thing.
I was going to say, yeah.
You are meeting them on their level culturally, but also I feel like a different captain would have been like, it's dishonorable to kill the people who help you or whatever.
Right.
But this one's like, you know, Archer puts on his fucking like submarine commander hat.
Yeah, it's a little bit
the laurels on it.
Yeah. Too eerie how much it kind of aligns with the foreign policy direction of the United States at this time of like,
yeah,
let's be belligerent. That's apparent. We've unlocked how to talk to another alien. Be belligerent. And specifically, yeah, here he's literally just laying out like, not only did I save you, but your ship sucks. I know you're out of ammo. I will cut you up. No problem. When there's other options there for like, look, you should go kick the ass of those people who actually poisoned you. Like you should, you know, let's both rest ourselves and go for a bigger fight. I mean, there's some more Trek captain.
Why don't you
way.
Come here and we'll have a fucking proper party?
That's
you know,
yeah,
like there's ways to do this that are like fun and sort of get to the same point of like, you have to understand each other culturally to not be like him doing like Nixon madman theory at the fucking Klingons.
And listen, we've been pointing out, I mean, this was written post 9/11, but
yes,
I think even accounting for that, I think there's still, this is the direction they always kind of thought of Archer as being like,
yes,
I guess he's not just, or I think if anything, he's rarely going to go that route of captain. He's going to go this, what if Kirk was stupid route? What if Kirk didn't have the like knowledgeable side of him sometimes? And
yeah.
And then we get this.
And then we get an incredible closing scene.
Oh, right. Yep.
The most incredible scene of the show. It's crazy. It cuts to the decon chamber where Hoshi and Malcolm and T'Pol are all in their fucking skivvies, like sweating. Just like, but they look relaxed as hell.
Like it's a sauna. And I had questions here. Like, is it like a sauna? Is it like a good...
They're getting UV irradiated, I believe.
But that's
what happens.
And they have gel on their bodies.
They're covered in gel. They're nude. I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of... They're in the fucking Starship Troopers locker room. like the co-ed locker room from Starship Troopers.
But they're cowards about it and still have some clothes on.
But they're cowards about it. And so, I mean, like, Malcolm is just like in boxers.
Yeah.
Whereas T'Pol and Hoshi are wearing like t-shirts.
Yeah.
But like crop tops.
Yeah,
t-shirts.
Yeah, of the era, actually.
And Phlox is like, all right, time to come out. You're all clean. And they all look at each other like, no, we have to stay nude for a while.
Well, the two humans are looking at T'Pol like, please, let's stay.
No, please come on. And T'Pol's like, fine, we can stay. It's very pleasant in here.
Yeah.
And then Malcolm's like, this is like the time I went to a sauna one time in my life.
Yeah,
to relax.
This one time.
One time I went to Mexico to go to the spa. They're just like sitting there in the nude, and that's how the episode ends.
And Hoshi makes a joke about how it doesn't smell.
It doesn't smell.
But I had to watch this twice, and it wasn't just because of the actors didn't have a lot of clothes on. It was because the first time I watched it, I was like, wait, was that a one shot? Because I like to be clear, this scene, there's something like strange about it. And it's like, well, okay, they have their actors almost like semi-nude, but maybe they're also stretching for time here, because it is one very long shot and it's languid because they're all relaxing and talking kind of slowly. And then three quick inserts of like T'Pol talking, the two of them asking her to stay, T'Pol talking again, and then a final like minute and a half long shot where, you know, they never cut and they just deliver their little lines about going to the spa this one time in his life and, hey, isn't it nice how it doesn't smell in here, and then the episode ends. But yeah, it is weird, both in its hypersexuality, but also it's filmed differently. It's leering, honestly.
Yeah.
Because you know the, like, ad for that week contained shots from this.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the episode.
That's it.
That's the end of that. It's kind of an anticlimactic ending to the episode. They're just like, wait, we're in the nude now, and we don't want to come out.
Yeah. Well, that's been another episode of Temporal Culture War. I did want to say thank you to people who have been subscribing to the Patreon.
Yeah.
That's
very
kind.
Did we come up with a good name for them or the Patreon yet?
Oh, we got it.
I guess Temporal Culture Warriors.
I guess they are Temporal
Warriors. Thank you, my beautiful Culture Warriors, for joining. Yeah. For just a buck a month, right?
Yeah.
You could hear another episode about once a month. I think up next we're going to watch Galaxy Quest next week.
Yeah.
And that'll be up.
Galaxy Quest.
While. I mean, I always want to watch Galaxy Quest, a movie I've seen 45,000 times in my life. But that's what's coming next on the Patreon, and you can sign up and get that when it comes out. And also help defray some of the costs of making this bad boy.
And we will see you next time for Polar Culture War. I am Clayton.
And I'm Maddie, and as always, let's go!
Let's go.